You are listening to the cycling podcast at the Giro d'Italia, supported by Science in Sport. Today we are in Cassano d'Adda.
Cozze ci delle cozze, cozze vicine, non spigudeci ora, non spigudeci ora.
Okay, we were played in there by the sounds at the finish. I actually, it's a bit of a mess up on my part, Daniel. My name is Richard Moore, by the way. This is Daniel Freep. Hello, Daniel.
Hi, Richard. Dove siamo? Should we do that later?
We'll do that later. I got caught out on my way to trying to get to the finish from the press room.
We all did, Richard.
I got stuck in big crowds, but I turned my recorder on just as Filippo Pozzato was off the front, and you could hear in the noise there some cries of people, people. And then the crowd got very excited as the race swept past.
Well, before we even go to the tail of the tapper today, should we discuss the extraordinary events that I witnessed after the finish when Filippo Pozzato, of course, attacked in the final kilometre. It was looking pretty good for him at one point. The unthinkable was about to happen. Filippo Pozzato was about to win his Giro d'Italia stage. He got caught. Roger Kluger of YAM Cycling took the stage victory. Then, of course, Filippo Pozzato returned to his team bus, and of course, it was a foregone conclusion that Ciro Scognamiglia would be waiting for him, and we are going to play a bit of their encounter, and then we're going to hear what Filippo said about the stage. But just listen here for Ciro greeting Filippo, or Filippo Pozzato, with the message that it's a good job he didn't win, because that would have ruined the whole joke. This is what Ciro, this is how you greet someone that you supposedly, well, you've declared your love for Filippo Pozzato over the last few days, and that was how you greeted him.
Well, we should point out that Ciro's actually here. Hello, Ciro.
Hello, listeners. It's always a pleasure as usual. And yes, my love for Filippo is something that is not about victories or other things. It's just love. It's something that you can understand, dear Daniel, or Richard?
Don't know if you can understand it, Daniel, can you?
Well, I'll tell you what, should we go straight in and listen to, well, first of all, the very first thing you hear, and if you understand Italian, you will understand this, I think it was Filippo threatening to come out topless, and Ciro saying no, he would start blushing, so he shouldn't come out topless, and then Ciro saying, yes, Filippo, good job you didn't win, because that would have ruined the whole joke.
No, non lo voglio vedere, sono facilmente impressionabile.
Ciao Ciro.
Hai rischiato di rovinare tutto con una vittoria.
Non so.
No, ma no. Tornando seri, oggi sei andato vicino, no?
Sai, stavo aiutando.
I've been trying to help Belletti, trying to set up his sprint. I'd been in the wind for 20 kilometers. Then someone counted. I think it was a Lotto Soudal rider, Lars Back. I could see the sprinters' teams were tired, so I tried to pull away. Then I looked back at the kilometre kite, and I decided to go again. There was a lot of wind there at the end, and when I came around the final bend, the last 500 metres seemed never-ending. They seemed to last an eternity. The rider who won, Kluger, no doubt benefited from getting onto my wheel, but he did brilliantly. I've just watched an action replay, and he did superbly to hold on. It was really impressive the way he got onto my wheel and what he did.
So, dear listener, we are here in the bus with Filippo Pozzato. He tried to win today. He was not able to win, but for me it's the same. My love for you, for him, is the same, even bigger.
Thank you very much.
We better leave before there are kisses exchanged.
Grazie, Filippo.
Ciao.
Okay, so we heard there the encounter between Ciro and Filippo Pozzato.
And a farewell kiss.
And a farewell
avert
kiss.
Avert your eyes, avert your ears.
A very unconventional start to tonight's podcast. We normally start with the tale of the tapper, but it was such an exceptional finale there that we felt we should start it.
We have pandered to the masses by including that straight away, haven't
we? Let's go to Lionel for the tale of the tapper. Over to you, Lionel.
Thank you, chaps. I've been enjoying the podcast since I've got home. An excellent edition of Kilometre Zero was released this morning. Well done on that. Well, it was a sleepy old day on the Giro d'Italia today, wasn't it? I must confess I was struggling to stay awake at times, but the final couple of kilometres were an absolute humdinger, and it was almost the dream scenario for, well, for the whole of Italy, for the whole of cycling. It would have spawned a new design in the range of t-shirts, I'm sure. Ciro would have been up on the ceiling. You'd have had to pull him down from the ceiling this evening had Filippo Pozzato pulled off that victory, but it was not to be. Oh, so close. But the tale of the tappa for stage 17 from Morvegno to Cassano d'Adda, it was 196 kilometres flat slash downhill, looked like it would be a sprint finish. That didn't quite happen. The early part of the race, there was a three-man breakaway. Daniel Oss of BMC on the attack for the third major time in this Giro. He was joined by Pavel Brut of Tinkoff and Ujet Zupa, the Albanian who rides for Pozzato's Willia Tristina team. They built a decent enough advantage, 4 minutes at one point, still 4 minutes with 100 kilometres to go, but it wasn't going to stay away, although it did come very close. The stage passed through the town of Treviglio, the home of Bianchi, and that was quite fitting because the pink jersey, Stephen Kruiswijk, is riding a Bianchi bicycle. The race was all coming back together in the last 25 kilometres, but then another trio of riders, Ignatis Konovalovas, Lars Back and Maxim Belkov, tried to go across to the initial three-man break, and they joined up together with about 22 kilometres to go, and this six-man group worked really well, and they kept it going and were still a handful of seconds ahead in the final 5 kilometres. On the run-in, the Bardiani sprinter Sonny Colbrelli's hopes of winning the stage were dashed with a couple of kilometres to go. He had some kind of problem, mechanical problem or puncture, or he just ran off the road, but he was ruled out of the sprint. With about a kilometre and a half to go, the six-man group were caught. Lars Back tried a last-gasp effort to try and stay away. And then the extraordinary happened. Just before they went under the one-kilometre flag, Filippo Pozzato burst out of the peloton. And for a moment, it was just like Milan San Remo in 2006. Pozzato came round the final corner alone, and he was looking good. He was going to win it. But no, a rider in the I Am Cycling jersey also shot out of the peloton, got onto Pozzato's wheel and went past Pozzato, and that was Roger Kluger. He is a track rider with the IM Cycling team, and a fitting victory for them the day after the announcement that the team will be folding at the end of the year. So a huge win for Kluger. Nizzolo won the sprint for second, Nikias Arndt was third, and Sascha Modolo was fourth. No change overall. Kruiswijk's in pink, Nizzolo in red, Kuniga in blue, Jungels in white. Tomorrow it's the longest stage of the race, 244 kilometres to Pinerolo, featuring a second category climb around 20 kilometres from the end. So we'll look forward to that. Back to you chaps in Italy.
Thank you very much for that tale of the tappa, Lionel. It's great to hear you, hear your voice. You're very croaky in last night's episode, I thought. You sounded like you'd been living it up for a couple of weeks. Tonight, it sounded very intimate, sounded like you were in a room with lots of soft furnishings. Maybe a padded room or something, I don't know. It was a very intimate sounding tale of the tappa. So,
in homage maybe to the love affair of the summer, the romance of the summer, Ciro Scogna Emilio and Pippo Pozzato.
I could see him reclining on his chaise longue in his smoking jacket.
Well, Ciro. But it's not a romance, it's a reality. It's that I want to explain really, in a way, really clear to our listeners. And for example, Richard, before I was listening to you, yes, because it's maybe not thinkable, but I listen also, and you defined our kiss with Filippo really unconventional. But for me, it's normal. I mean, to kiss Filippo, for me, it's normal, listeners.
No, I said it was an unconventional start to the podcast, and then I wasn't judging that at all, Ciro.
Thanks,
Richard. Let's clear
that
one up.
I know that you are really open-minded, and also you, Daniel Dainer.
What did we think, though? It was a pretty dull stage. That's another reason for this tomfoolery, this clowning around, because it was a classic transitional stage. You say it was
a dull stage. I mean, if we'd been able to see the finish, it might have been quite exciting, but all the journalists were snagged up on their way to the finish. But I found it quite fascinating to watch a peloton that was clearly on its knees with no sprinters really, apart from Nizzolo And one or two others that are left in the peloton. Everyone else extremely tired. No teams able to chase. And it opened up the race to various different scenarios, certainly in the finale. And that was what allowed Pozzato to attack. It was what allowed people like Lars Bak to counterattack. And ultimately, it created the window of opportunity for Roger Kluger to slip through and take the victory for Yam Cycling.
Yes, okay, but Roger Kluge, okay, talking about Roger Kluge, in your opinion, he understand that for his fault, people doesn't win today? Roger, you are able to sleep tonight for this? Because I don't know, it's incredible. This guy has really a weight on his soul. How can I explain you?
He broke Italian hearts, didn't he, Roger Kluge?
Richard, I don't know Italian arts, but my art, yes.
Eurosport, the home of cycling.
Eurosport are sponsoring a Pedal de Charme competition. Once again, the nominations were coming in today. Lots of unconventional ones. One for Lars Bak from Rob Hatch, the Eurosport commentator.
Ciro,
we're still thinking about it, I think.
Ciro, you were paying close attention to the race. Who was the Nippo Fantini rider who went through his home village and got a rousing reception? No?
Daniel, you should understand that in a finish line like this, I have only my eyes focused on Filippo Pozzato, not even on Vincenzo Nibali, listeners. It's really unthinkable, but it was like that.
Ciro, before you go, any more news on Nibali, his state of mind? And on Rai, Italian television this evening, they were debating whether he should, well, not whether he should leave the Giro, but whether he should now switch his focus very firmly onto the Tour de France, the Olympics. Any more news from the Astana camp today?
No, not really. I mean, today the Shark was a little bit upset against the press because for him arrived a lot of critics and so maybe was a little bit upset for that.
Did he say this? How did he manifest his discontent?
With clear words. I mean, he was not happy because, for example, he said, some of you say that I have problems maybe concerning my head. I'm not really concentrated on the race, but it's not like that. Certainly, I have no problems in my head.
Is it because he's getting a hard time from the wolf?
Maybe, could be. Could
the wolf
be, exactly,
was on the phone to him last night.
And concerning his shape, I mean, between tonight and tomorrow morning, they will realize some analysis in clinics. And so maybe tomorrow, maybe we could know more about this.
You only really need a stopwatch, though, don't you, to realize that Nibali's not... Daniel's making a triangular shape with his hands. Ciro, you're off. Now, you've got your T-shirt there. Do you like your T-shirt?
It's marvelous, and tonight, listeners, we are near to Milan, my house, and I will sleep in my house tonight, obviously, with this T-shirt.
But you're going to wear it tomorrow as well?
Exactly, but I will sleep with this T-shirt, but listeners, not with Filippo Pozzato.
Allora il lupo sospirò e domandò: ti sei già fatto un'idea, benedetto figlio, di cosa vuoi fare nella vita? And so the wolf sighed and asked, do you already have an idea, blessed son, of what you want to do with your life?
So that was the latest installment of the Shark's Tale there. What was that all about, Daniel?
Astonishing. I thought the wolf references went down pretty well yesterday, so I plumped for that again. The wolf, of course, being Vincenzo Nibali's father. I'm not sure a shark has ever... conceived a baby shark before, but there's a first time for everything.
Nibali has a child, does he not?
He does.
A boy?
A girl.
What's she? Is she a piglet or a...
The mind boggles, Richard. But there was the shark at some indefinite point in Nibali's past. I can't remember exactly when that extract was from. Asking the shark whether the wolf asking the shark whether he had decided what he wanted to do with his life. And I thought this was very relevant today because, as we've just discussed, some big decisions facing Vincenzo Nibali. What does the shark want to do with the rest of this Giro, the rest of this summer, the rest of his career?
I was genuinely intrigued by the fact that he calls his father the wolf. And we were talking about this last night over dinner because that's kind of things we talk about. And you were saying that throughout his book, he refers to his father as the wolf.
Exactly. It's like... It's if you remember the ITV Saturday night program Gladiators, it's wolf. Very reminiscent of that. You've got the wolf, the shark, and who knows what other animals. It's actually a bit like the custom that Chiro and I have of, we've mentioned this before, haven't we? We always call each other by a different animal name. So tonight, for example, Chiro was the penguin and I was the nightingale. But it's very odd.
It's really odd. I mean, really bizarre. Let's talk about today's winner, Roger Kluger. I mean, you were asking me, Daniel, if I know anything about Roger Kluger. I don't know a great deal about him. He's a very good track rider. He rode well at the World Championships in London in March. He was silver medalist in the Omnium. He's 30 years old. It was a classic sort of track rider's move, wasn't it? I mean, Filippo Bozzato seemed to go clear, and it looked, you know, daylight opened up. It looked like it might happen for him, but Kluger just got the timing right. He didn't really attack as such. He just really rode off the front of the bunch. He didn't launch any kind of dramatic attack.
Yeah, and as we said earlier, the kind of move that can only really happen when sprinters' teams and the sprinters themselves are very tired. And, you know, yet again today, you look at it on paper and you think it's a transitional stage between two major mountain ranges, the Dolomites and the Alps, and it's going to be an easy day. And what happens? They go pretty much eyeballs out from the start and everyone's tired. Therefore, there are opportunities for finishers, opportunists, riders like Kluger, and he seized it today.
You don't see it often, though, do you?
Not anymore, no.
You really don't. You used to. I've said this before in the podcast. Yelena Naidem was a specialist at that sort of move back in the day.
There's another specialist, former specialist, finisher here at the Giro. Always wears immaculate shoes.
Uchikov. As Thierry Marie as well did it on occasion. A prologue specialist who could do it as well on occasions. Ekimov, pretty good
Stefan
at that.
Stefan Kung is a modern-day rider, rider, who has the capability to do that kind of thing. Fabian Cancellara, of course, has pulled off that sort of move in the past. And Pozzato himself, I must say.
Yeah, no, it's a really exciting thing to be able to do. A brilliant way to win, you know, and he's a big, powerful rider, Kluger. Of course, his win came just 24 hours after we learned that the team that he's part of, I Am Cycling, is folding. And I spoke to Shell Karlstrom after the stage. You did too, Daniel. We're going to play one of those interviews. We haven't decided which one yet. We've got to figure out which is better. But he's one of the sports directors at I Am Cycling. There's a lack of bitterness, I would say. There's a sort of general goodwill, it seems, in that team. And one of the questions I asked him, and I know you asked him as well, was how do you, when it's known that the team is ending and these riders are riding for their own individual futures, how do you get them to carry on riding as a team? And that will be a challenge, I guess, for the rest of the season. But on the evidence of today, they did ride pretty well as a team. So here is either me or Daniel speaking to Shell Karlstrom. A bittersweet day, but maybe more sweet than bitter.
Yeah, at the moment you can't change the things. The fact that we don't have the sponsor for next year, the team doesn't continue. But I think this day was a thing that we had been waiting for some time already.
It means a lot, obviously, a stage win. But you know, I guess it probably means more. Does it coming on the back of yesterday's news?
I don't know if it means more, but for sure it means a lot. I mean, we have been knocking on the door for some time. Today it really worked well. They talked between Heino and Roger, and they decided to do their own thing. Heino wait for the sprint and Roger to try something before, and it worked.
What's been the atmosphere in the team the last couple of days?
Well, of course, it's it's a little bit sad and down, a little bit down morally, but I mean, they are professional athletes and they know what they can grab from a stage victory, and for sure they do the maximum on the road. So
I mean, they've obviously all got their own careers to be riding for, you know, contracts to win. Does that make it more difficult to get to have them riding as a team, or are they still very united?
Well, of course, it makes it a little bit more difficult, but they are, like I said, they are professional athletes and they know what it takes to win a stage or win a race, and it's of course much easier to do it as a team. And today we showed it also when Vegard, he was doing the work in front to catch the break, and then in the end it was Roger that could do it. So a big thanks also to him.
He's a good rider, isn't he? Who's been knocking the door, a good track rider as well. That was a perfect sort of move by him.
Yeah, that's the perfect situation that he can do with a corner or some technical parts and just do the thing. He's a strong rider, so yeah.
So that was Kjell Karlström, the sports director at I Am Cycling.
Yes, Richard, and as you say, they have been a sort of affable, very approachable outfit throughout their lifetime as a pro continental team and a world tour team. With a very stylish kit, and it's almost seemed as though they have lacked a bit of sort of killer instinct, really. And today was a refreshing break from that trend. I mean, they haven't won a lot of races, as we mentioned last night. As Karlström said, I mean, I suppose now there is a great incentive, and as Hausler said to us, Heinrich Hausler, yesterday morning, there's a great incentive for their riders to go out and prove themselves and really forge a new future. We mentioned a couple of riders yesterday who will probably be quite attractive to prospective suitors, and not everyone will find a contract, but there are talented riders in there. Kluger is one who I'm sure will be fine, and particularly after this stage win, he'll be quite sought after, I would imagine. He's the kind of guy who could fit quite nicely into a lead out train, but it was nice, and it was almost poignant to see them win today, because
probably their biggest win, no?
It probably was, because they haven't had an awful lot of luck. They haven't made, perhaps, enough of their own luck over the past couple of years, but it was good to see them rewarded.
You are listening to the Cycling Podcast at the Giro d'Italia, supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Yes, thank you very much to Science and Sport, who are sponsoring us at this Giro d'Italia and offering 20% off to our listeners. If you go to www.scienceandsport.com and at the checkout enter the code SIS20, that's SIS20, you will get 20% off. So please do that. We actually released an episode of Kilometer Zero today, that's Wednesday, I believe, on nutrition. We call it Feed Zone. It's a bit of a story of what the riders eat during the race, and there's interviews with people from Science and Sport, with Team Sky's nutritionist James Morton, with Dave Brailsford, with the riders Albert Timmer and Joe Dombrowski. We also spoke to a couple of soigneurs from Giant Alpecin and Cannondale teams, and hopefully that's interesting, and that's out now. There's one more Kilometre Zero to come this week before a final Kilometre Zero next week, which will be our sort of journey of the Giro. Daniel looks nervous because we haven't planned that one properly yet, but we're going to be doing that over the next few days. Aren't we, Daniel?
Richard.
Now, Daniel, we didn't do Dove Siamo earlier. Perhaps now is a good time to say where we are.
So where are we?
And where we were earlier.
So this morning we were in Molvino, just in the shadow of the Brenta Dolomites, the Dolomiti
where
di Brenta.
Are we now? Where are we now?
We are now in Cassano d'Adda, believe it or not, in the province of Milan. We've come through the province of Bergamo today. We've been past the home of Bianchi, the Bianchi bike company. In Treviglio, we've been through the birthplace of Caravaggio, the Baroque painter. We have been through a place called Calcio, which means kick or football or calcium in English. I meant to look up whether there was any kind of link with those nouns and why the town was called that. I didn't manage to do it.
You've been busy.
So I've been very busy, yeah.
And we're sitting outside a bar in and it's very, very pleasant, very sunny evening opposite a beautiful, stately home, which was home to the race headquarters today. Now, at the start of today, Daniel, you spoke to some interesting characters, didn't you?
Well, one in particular, Richard. This Giro d'Italia has seen the resurgence, really, of Damiano Cunego, the 2004 Giro d'Italia winner. Of course, a real prodigy then. He won the Giro d'Italia at 22 years of age, was widely expected to go on and really dominate Italian cycling and possibly world cycling for 5-10 years to come thereafter.
The two big stars, or the two big future stars, were Cunego and Alejandro Valverde.
Indeed. And it really didn't happen for Cunego. Not only did it not happen, but his career really fizzled over the years. And after several years at Lampre, he moved to Nippo, what is now Nippo Fantini team, last year. And his has been quite anonymous, really, largely because it's a pro continental team that doesn't figure in the biggest races on the calendar, generally speaking. But Kunigo has come back to prominence in this Giro d'Italia because he's leading the King of the Mountains competition with an emphatic advantage over Stefan Denifel of Yam Cycling. So Kunigo is on 134 points at the moment. Denifel is on 72 points. And obviously there are two big mountain stages to come to Rizul and Sant'Anna di Vinadio. But it's looking very good for Kunigo. And I was keen to catch up with him this morning and hear just whether he agrees that this has been his best Giro for a long, long time. And just to really assess his state of mind going into this crucial final few days for him.
Oh, yeah. Nelle corse non mi sono mai divertito, ho sempre sofferto e ho sempre cercato di dare.
I wouldn't say I've ever enjoyed a bike race. I've always suffered. I've always tried to give my best and struggled to do so. But it's my job and I try to do it as well as I can. I'm happy with how it's gone so far in the mountains competition. But it's a stress every day to think about it and to defend the jersey. We've got two incredibly difficult stages coming up, and I'm not sure how they'll turn out for me. It's already important for a new, small team like ours to have had the jersey for 10 days. This is a big shop window for us. I'll still go for stage wins, and the mountains points will come as a natural consequence of being at the front, and vice versa. I'll give it a go. I need a bit of faith in myself and a bit of good fortune. It's definitely not in the bag. Not at all. They're all lining up to attack me, and nothing is decided, unfortunately. I suffered a lot yesterday because of the rest day. You're going full gas for 2 weeks. You stop for a day and your body relaxes too much. Restarting with a stage like that at 44 kilometers an hour, I suffered like a dog. But that's the way it goes. Unfortunately, that's the way cycling is now. You have to adapt.
Però è così. Il ciclismo purtroppo adesso è questo e bisogna adattarsi.
Well, old Damiano sounds quite downbeat there, Daniel, for somebody who's winning one of the major, wearing one of the major jerseys in the Giro.
Well, he did, Richard. And with Kunigo, you never really know whether there are undiscovered depths to his character and to his thought processes, or you know whether you can really take what he says at face value. I mean, as you say, there. He talks about never having really enjoyed bike racing and just not really enjoying this Giro in a way. I mean, and having to adapt because, you know, the racing is so fast. And, for example, on the stage to Andalo suffering like a dog. And as you say, he did sound very downbeat. And you never know with Kunigo whether there's a subtext. I mean, at various points in the past, he has made more or less veiled references to doping in the peloton. He's never come out and really denounced dopers or really given anything
apart
away
from
about
the transfer that he wore.
Well, exactly. I am doping free, which of course was kind of
with a little smiley face,
wantonly mistranslated, misconstrued, misinterpreted as meaning that he was doping but wasn't paying for it.
Doping for free.
Exactly, which was absolutely scurrilous and disgraceful.
Not what he intended at all.
No, not what he intended. Yeah, so you never really know with him. And he has made comments in the past about having really lost years of his career or lost results to riders who had been doping. Of course, Kunigo's career coincides with one of the darkest periods in professional cycling. And, you know, I've spoken over the years to many of his former teammates. Leonardo Bertagnoli, I remember a conversation with him, who's a guy who fell foul of the biological passport, is now out of cycling, but and really has nothing to gain from praising Kunigo or defending Kunigo. But I remember him saying to me a couple of years ago that, in his view, Kunigo has had his career robbed by dopers because Kunigo was someone who was quite firmly against doping. So you never really know with Kunigo, and you know, you can make of that interview what you will, but I found it very interesting. I also spoke to his team manager, the Nippo Fantini team manager, Francesco Pelosi, this morning about Kunigo, about whether he's found a new lease of life at this small Italo-Japanese team, and what we can expect from him at Nippo Fantini over the next couple of years.
Francesco Pelosi, team manager of Nippo Fantini. There was some surprise when Damiano Kunigo signed for your team, but the decision has obviously been a good one because this is probably the best Damiano Kunigo we've seen for a good while in this Giro d'Italia.
Oh, yes. After 1 year, last year, in which he tried again to do the general classification, we worked a lot with him to understand that if he focused on stage, probably he could arrive at new bigger results. And this is the best example, because we started this Tour of Italy with another mind, thinking only about stages. And during the first escape, he tried the GPM. And so now we are a blue jersey, one of the four jerseys of the Giro. And for us is a big satisfaction. We have to work a lot also in this last week, but normally Damiano in the last week is stronger than the other. So for sure we will try again to be in escape, to consolidate our jersey, but also thinking about one stage.
Francesco, in Italian cycling, people have wondered for a few years about Cunego. They've said he's had a complicated career, he's maybe a complicated guy, and all sorts of different explanations for why he's never got to the same level as in 2004 when he won the Giro. What is your explanation?
In my opinion, Damiano had a difficult career because he is a strong rider, able to win also one big tour, but also normal races. And he didn't find a balance between these two skills of him. I think that now is another rider, thinking about last 10 years, and now he is able also to teach to the other guys how to move in the peloton, how to try to win. But regarding his skills, he don't focus on one type of career, because he was able to win both and both. I think that this indecision was his big problem. Also because Damiano, without a goal, he isn't able to work well. And also him pretend a lot of from himself. But for sure here in a small team in which he have to be the captain, but also a guide for the young guys, and he can do what he wants, because last year decided to do the general classification, and we told okay, try this year as you want, after we can speak and try to do something better. It's easier for him working this type of team.
And just lastly, Francesco, I know Damiano has plans with your team for the future, and they're not just plans as a rider. There's also the plan to become part of the team management. Can you just explain a little bit about that?
Yes, in this moment we have done an agreement for other 3 years with us, two as a rider, and then after we want to move him in a management part, and I want him as a point of connection between three important functions in a team: the rider, the sportive director, and the trainer. He will have this function in our team in 2019.
So Cunego, as we mentioned, Daniel, is in the King of the Mountains jersey, which he's had almost since the start. Can he hold it? I know you've had your abacus out.
Well, he said, he was adamant, and rightly so, that it is not in the bag, and it's far from in the bag. I mean, on the face of it, his advantage looks huge. He's got 134 points, and the next best rider has 72. However, you look at the point scale, and you consider the climbs that we've got to come, and the Cimacopi, so the biggest climb, the highest climb of the Giro alone, the Colle dell'Agnello, which we're due to climb, or the riders are due to climb on Friday, is worth 45 points. So first category climbs, so the first rider over at first category climbs, of which there are several over those last two big mountain stages, are worth 35 points. So you can easily see how his advantage could be wiped out very, very easily.
A climb with very painful memories for us, Daniel, is it not?
The Agnello, yeah, we ran out of petrol on the Agnello.
We better make sure we got a full tank in the Maserati.
It'd be really embarrassing.
It was bad enough in a Renault Espace needing to call for emergency help on the Agnello.
We really must, yeah. But just going back to Cunego's interview, I mean, we talked about the sort of lack of joie de vivre, the lack of enjoyment that really comes through when he talks about what on the face of it is his most successful Giro for a while. But he also talks about how stressful and how aggressively raced this Giro has been, and you know that's not unique, I don't think, to this Giro. There is a trend in professional cycling for a very aggressive racing from the gun in a lot of races. And you know, we've been speaking in the last few days, Rich, to former riders about the Giro d'Italia when we did our kilometer zero about food, for example, and they will tell these stories that aren't just urban myths. They are actually reality about the likes of Mario Cipollini. And this is not that long ago. This is in the late 90s. Declaring a ceasefire, declaring an embargo on any breakaways in a particular stage and declaring that the peloton would stop by the roadside after a certain number of kilometres and they would, I don't know, eat some panini and and salami and then they would go on their way and then they would race the finales of races. But you have to also consider that the Giro, I mean, in the late 90s, there were around about, typically there were around about 20 teams in the Giro, and 17 of those teams would be Italian. And I think it's a communication issue as much as anything. The reason you can't enforce these sort of gentlemen's agreements whereby the whole peloton decides as one, as a hive mind, that they're not going to race for the whole stage, that's simply not possible because of things like the language barrier. And consequently, it's every man for himself. And they really do tear strips off each other most of the time.
But older riders always say, and Kunigo comes in that category now, they always complain it's not like it used to be.
It's true. That said, however, Richard, I think we should hear again from Filippo Pozzato and one half of the romance of the summer, the cycling romance of the summer, because we joke a lot about Pozzato, but one thing about him is he's quite perceptive when it comes to cycling and analysing races and analysing trends in cycling. And today at the finish, when we were talking about his near miss today, he did actually make a more general observation about racing and how it has become more and more competitive, more and more aggressive, and more every man for himself.
È un ciclismo che è tanto, quello dicevo con i miei compagni, cazzo, è tanto esasperato perché si parte veramente forte.
Cycling at the moment is just wrung by its neck. Everyone goes hard from the gun. My teammates and I have just been talking about this. We tried to get away yesterday, but the problem is that we're doing the first hour at 52, 53 kilometers an hour. It's impossible to get away. You'd need to be doing 60 kilometers an hour. You just have to take stock of that. I think that yesterday, the average speed up to the first climb was just amazing. The leaders went at incredible speeds. I was talking to Valverde about it this morning, and he said that his watts per kilo were just stratospheric. The general level is rising, and the difference in abilities is getting narrower all the time. Technology is advancing all the time. Everything is constantly evolving. Our bikes now are so advanced. They're super fast. Our training methods are extremely refined across all teams. I also always say that Italian cycling was once the creme de la creme, but there used to be 3 English riders and now there are 40, 5 of whom are of the highest class. Same with the Americans. Then there are African riders, riders from countries that had never heard of cycling not that long ago. This all raises the level and reduces the gulf between the best and the worst here. It's a good thing because it widens the reach of the sport. The only issue is that it all gets harder for established nations like Italy.
So, Filippo Pozzato making some serious points there, Daniel. This is most
very much so. Very much so. And I think he's right. I think, as we've said on the podcast before, Richard, cycling has become a lot more international. And, you know, inevitably at the Tour de France this year, people will start dissecting times up climbs and they'll just start extrapolating, estimating wattages. And, you know, I think we've discussed that at great length in the past. But this is one factor that I don't think is considered enough. The fact that the gene pool of professional cycling is so much wider now than it was 10 or 15 years ago. And as Pozzato says, you've got Africans, you've got guys from, you know, Kazakhstan, etc., etc., people who were simply not being put through the selection filter to become professional cyclists 15, 20 years ago.
I mean, that you have spoken about this before, but it's a very interesting and maybe not acknowledged enough topic that the talent pool is much, much, much bigger than it used to be. You know, going back 2 decades, 3 decades, it was a narrow part of Europe, wasn't it? That all the riders came from little areas within countries, not even entire countries.
Indeed, Richard, and we mentioned there the number of Americans, Anglo-Saxon riders in the peloton.
Slovakians, and Kazakhstanis, Russians.
Our very own friend of the podcast, Joe Dombrowski.
Well, that's a good link, Daniel. But before we get to that, we did bring up Pedlar Ducharme. There's a lot of sort of threads left hanging in this in tonight's podcast, I feel. One of them was Pedler de Charme. We haven't named a Pedler de Charme for today. I have to say that I said last night that I would dispatch you to the Katusha bus to try and present a Pedler de Charme t-shirt to Ilnur Zakarin. I did that, and I managed it successfully. So we'll post that picture tomorrow morning. He was delighted to receive it. It seemed like a very nice young man who's promised us an interview. A proper interview. He didn't have time today.
And he met this morning a former Giro winner, didn't he? Gilberto Simoni was very keen to meet him with his daughter.
We were talking about Damiano Cunego, and they were, of course, great rivals, Simoni and Cunego, in the Saico team, weren't they, for a while?
They did. And did you spot another former Giro winner? A Giro winner from 20 years ago at the start this morning, my hero, Pavel Tonkop.
Well, I didn't see him. Was he at the start?
He was.
Interesting. Well, you mentioned Joe Dombrowski there, Daniel, and that's fortunate because every night this week we're going to play a small extract from Joe Dombrowski's audio diary, which he's been recording for us throughout this Giro. It's really eclectic in keeping with Joe himself. Joe is, as we mentioned last night, in really good form, and you know he could win over the next couple of days. He could win a stage here. He's really going well. And he's kind of off the leash with Rigoberto Urán's overall challenge collapsing. Let's hear another little snippet from Joe's diary. This will be released as a friend's special after the Giro. You can become a friend at thecyclingpodcast.com for £10. That buys you 11 exclusive podcasts. I think we've released about 5 already this year. So do sign up if you haven't already, and thanks if you have. Here is Joe Dombrowski talking about journalists.
Now that I'm not a journalist anymore and I can ask you, what's the most annoying thing that journalists do?
The most annoying thing journalists do...
Which just bugs the shit out of you?
When journalists...
Yeah.
So, there's sort of a wide spectrum of journalists out there.
Yes.
There's some I just don't like, period, and don't want to talk to.
Not that you're going to name names, but yeah. Sure.
There's some of those.
Yeah.
There's some that, like, I don't really like, but they're fine as a journalist. There's some I like but don't like as a journalist, and then there's some that I just plain like all around.
Yeah, that's a very slim, that's a small group though, huh?
Yes.
Yep.
But the thing is, you have to be a little bit careful, because you said now that I'm not a journalist,
well, yeah,
you can say whatever you want, really, right? but that's the whole thing. It's like, as soon as like journalist goes into journalist mode, a lot of times writers go into like defense
mode.
Yeah. And it's just this like standoff, like, oh, you can't say anything. And I think for me the most annoying thing is when journalists try and be like your buddy.
Yeah.
Like, hey, let's go get some beers.
We're buds.
And it's like, okay, yeah, let's go get some beers.
And then
chit chat. And it's like, yeah, let's chit chat. And then halfway through, they pull out a microphone, and it's like, wait a minute.
No.
Are we just getting beers to chit-chat, yeah, or are you trying to turn this into a story?
You're
because
working.
I'm not working, so you shouldn't be working.
So that was Joe Dombrowski with his classification of journalist. Did that make you feel a little bit insecure, Daniel? It did me.
Very much so, Richard.
Didn't know
which category are we in.
I asked him the other day, and he didn't actually say, which was even more unnerving.
Hmm.
Anyway, it's not...
Well, having seen Chiro set the standard with Pozzato, I mean, I expect...
I haven't kissed
nothing
him.
More than...
I'm not gonna.
Kisses, I mean, on both cheeks from everyone I interview from now on.
No, come on. That can't become the norm, I don't think. I don't feel that's really tenable. Listen, we should wrap it up for tonight. Yes? Sorry.
Not before Richard mentioning tomorrow's very tricky stage to Pinerolo, 240 kilometres, so very long. First part of the stage is all across the Po Plains, the Pianura Padana, as they call it in Italy. And then we get into the hills of Piedmont, and there's a very difficult climb to Pramartino, which will be familiar to anyone who paid close attention to the 2011 Tour de France. Thomas Vauclair, who was in the yellow jersey at the time,
went off the road,
ended up in someone's garage. Do you know what, Richard? Tomorrow we're going to stop at that house where Thomas Vauclair went off the road and he ended up in someone's driveway, almost in their shed. And we are going to see if the same people still live there, and we're going to talk to them. I've just made that executive decision right now.
Edvald Bosen, you're such a buffalo, Daniel. Edvald Bosenhagen won that stage, didn't he?
He did.
That was an exciting stage. Andy Schleck was very worried about that descent, I remember, because he'd been distanced on the road into Gap a couple of days earlier, and he's worried about a stage finishing so soon after quite a treacherous descent.
And we spent that stage in a car driven by Stephen Roach, didn't we?
Yes. Was that not the stage where you were pretending that you were a reporter in the 1950s or something?
1920s.
20s, yeah. Oh, happy memories. Happy days. Anyway, that's all for tonight.
Well, what's going to happen tomorrow? Quickly, before we go, I mean, I think it's a good stage for Nibali with that descent. Obviously, it's a very steep climb. It's a dangerous one for Crooswijk. It's a very punchy climb. I don't know if you remember going up it, Rich, in the Tour, but 10.5% over 4.65 kilometres. It's gonna favour the punchy climbers. And, you know, is Crooswijk more punchy than Chavez? Or is, I mean, Valverde you would pick from the guys in contention for the Giro as the sort of punchiest climber. So, and a good descender, of course. So I would say he would be the smart bet for tomorrow's stage.
I think the Nibali is a good shout as well, because he is not, a bit like the Tour last year where he was below par, he's a fighter. He's not going to want to go out this Giro without something. He's going to want to salvage some pride. And I can see him pulling something out of the bag over the next couple
and
of days.
Another great opportunity for Diego Ulissi. This Giro d'Italia has been designed almost, I think Diego Ulissi might have designed the course for this Giro d'Italia. We might investigate that over the last few days. I think he infiltrated RCS Sport, and because there have been about six or seven stages that have been perfect for him.
So his record's pretty poor. Anyway, that's all for tonight. Thank you very much, Daniel.
Thank you.